Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Monday, November 3rd, the day before Election Day. This from the cartoon, this morning's comics, The Brilliant Mind of Edison Lee. 'Twas the night before the election when all through this nation volunteers began stirring at every poll station. The ballots were all printed and numbered with care in hopes that all voters soon would be there. Sweet. Except we don't have so many ballots. It's the electronic machines have been pre-rigged and preset and debolled and, well, in any case. There is a couple of things for the day. I would love to hear this morning. Well, it's morning here in Portland, Oregon. It's 9 o'clock in the morning. It's noon on the East Coast. I would love to hear from Republicans or people who voted Republican. Excuse me. I had to cough there. Anyway, for people who, if you voted for George Bush in either of the last two elections, or frankly, if you voted for any, you know, a Republican for president in any recent elections, if you consider yourself a Republican or an independent with Republican leanings, I'd love to hear from you today. Our number is 866-303-2270. I promise you I'm not going to pull a Sean Hannity on you and ridicule you or you know, take cheap shots. I'm curious what motivates people either, A, to vote for John McCain, if you are going to be voting for McCain, or perhaps, frankly, more important, what I'm more curious about are the people who are those of you who consider yourselves Republicans, who in the past have voted for Republicans and who are voting for Barack Obama this time. Love to hear from you. Our toll-free number is 866-303-2270. Now, that said, there is a story out there that is being pushed by the press as if it was true. In fact, it blows my mind how effectively the Republicans get this stuff out. It was like the death tax. I mean, you know, when they first rolled out the death tax, within a few months, they had all over the United States, you had reporters talking about the death tax. Sorry, it's the inheritance tax, right? Well, this new meme that is being rolled out, this new thought virus that's being rolled out by the Republicans, is the idea that Americans don't like Congress to be all in the hands of one party and that more things get done. It's better for America when you have a divided Congress. And therefore, it would be a disaster if we got more than 60 Democrats in the Senate so that they could break a filibuster. So that the Republicans couldn't even bother to launch a filibuster. In 1962, in the election of 62, John Kennedy was president. He was doing a fine job. The election of 1962 brought 63 Democrats into the Senate. There were 37 Republicans. There were 259 Democrats. There were 176 Republicans. So overwhelmingly, in 1963, which leads us to the election of 64, when Lyndon Johnson was running against Barry Goldwater in the election of 64, you'd had a Congress for 2 years that had more than 60 votes in the Senate. In other words, you had single-party rule. And that became the basis of LBJ's campaign. Listen to this. This is a campaign advertisement from Lyndon Johnson. It starts out with, after the assassination of Jack Kennedy, it shows footage of him stepping off the plane, coming back from Dallas, and getting before a group of people and talking about, you know, John Kennedy's assassination. And then the voiceover comes in as we see, you know, things being done in Congress and starts talking about what was accomplished in the previous 2 years or year and a half with a Republic or a democratically controlled Senate with more than 60 votes, a democratically controlled House of Representatives and a Democrat for president. It was a spectacular time. And I'm just astounded by the number of pundits that I'm seeing, particularly on the TV cable shows, and the news reporters who are buying into this idea that either, A, this is something the American people wouldn't like, and I'm telling you, Lyndon Johnson campaigned on this and won, or that this is something that produces a bad results. Here is the ad. This is an ad from the 1964 Lyndon Johnson for President campaign.
And now the ideas and the ideals, which he so nobly represented, must and will be translated into effective action.
Okay, so that was Lyndon Johnson standing, you know, at the after Kennedy's funeral. And gets a big applause, and then the voice
made that November day was strong. One by one, they have been kept.
Promises.
An $11 billion tax cut proposed by President Kennedy was signed into law by President Johnson on February 26th. The president sought and won support from both parties in passing a bill to fulfill our founding fathers' commitment that every American have his full constitutional rights. The anti-poverty bill expressed the president's and the people's determination to eliminate poverty from the richest nation in the world. It was signed on August 20th. Led by the president, Congress passed five significant bills on education, more than any other Congress in recent history. The president signed the Wilderness Bill, saving threatened areas of natural beauty. He signed new legislation attacking the problems of transportation and housing in our cities. New programs to help ensure the farmer a fair reward for his labor. In fact, 45 major bills were passed. But the president's leadership was not felt in the halls of Congress alone. He helped to settle a 4.5-year-old conflict between the railroad companies and the men who operate the trains, averting a strike that could have paralyzed the nation. He cut the federal budget, only the second time in 10 years this has been done. And federal expenditures have been kept below the level authorized in the budget. In the dark days of last November, President Johnson expressed the nation's purpose in three simple words. Let us continue. Vote for President Johnson on November 3rd. The stakes are too high for you to stay home.
There you go. That was the ad that was played in 1964. It was one of the main ads for Johnson. It was a two-minute ad. I mean, they had some long ads back in the day. And this was the story, was with 63 Senate votes. 63. This is why it's so important to get Jeff Merkley elected in Oregon, to get Al Franken elected in Minnesota. And right on down the line, I mean, there's a whole long list of red states to get Kay Hagan elected in North Carolina, to get Jim Martin elected in Georgia. These are to get John Sununu thrown out in New Hampshire. These are key Republican seats. If we can get 60 or 61 seats in the United States Senate, then 2 years from now in the congressional races and 4 years from now in the presidential race, you are going to see the same kind of thing that we saw after the election of Franklin Roosevelt in 32, when he swept in a majority, a veto-proof and a filibuster-proof majority in the filibuster-proof is, I guess, the relevant point here, in the United States Senate and the House of Representatives, and the same thing in 1962. Yeah, when in the elections of 62, when John Kennedy was president, that enabled Lyndon Johnson to get all this work done in 63 and 64 and led to a successful election in 64. The American people actually like a united Congress. A united Congress actually gets things done. Now, we have had a united Congress, a filibuster-proof Congress, on a number of occasions when Republicans were in charge over the years. And what have they done? They've done things like making it harder for people to get to join unions, like, you know, rolling back environmental protections, like cutting taxes on billionaires and trillionaires and instead passing those taxes along to our children and grandchildren. No significant accomplishments that have been of benefit to anybody who earns less than $500,000 or $1 million a year. But when you look at all of the significant accomplishments that have happened in the history of the United States, of any real substantial means, it has been when there has been a filibuster-proof majority in the United States Senate plus a Democratic president and an absolute majority in the House of Representatives. And we are just a whisker away from getting that. So if you're in Minnesota and you can show up for Al Franken and to out Norm Coleman, and by the way, just Norm Coleman is running this ad now claiming that Franken is behind Coleman, this lawsuit against Coleman. Franken's got nothing to do with it. I mean, that's the truth. Franken's got nothing to do with it. And Coleman is just playing victim here. It's like, it reminds me of when Karl Rove claimed that there was a bug behind a painting in his behind a picture in his office when he was running a gubernatorial race in Texas years ago. Just as a stunt, turned out it couldn't have been planted there by the Democrats. In fact, it had to have been planted there by Karl Rove. But he got the news cycle on that thing. Norm Coleman's trying to do the same thing in Minnesota. It is filthy. It's despicable. Turn out for Al Franken. Turn out here in North Carolina for Kay Hagan. We're on the air in North Carolina. Turn out here for Jeff Merkley here in Oregon. All across the United States, whatever state you may be in, if you can't turn out, you know, it's getting a little late to send them some money, but get your friends. Call. We all know people all over the country. Call your friends. I want to talk to some Republicans after this. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman Radio Program brought to you in part by the Teamsters, proud supporters of the Employee Free Choice Act, Teamster.org, their website. By the way, heads up for our Canadian listeners, and frankly, in America, I think you might be able to see this at their website, ctv.ca, Canadian television, Canadian TV Broadcasting, CTV Newsnet is the name of the show, 9:45 Eastern Time. I'll be on with a panel of liberals and conservatives on their television network on the U.S. presidential election. Check it out if you're around. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. John in Santa Fe, listening on KTRC, you voted for George Bush once.
Yes.
And you're going to vote for?
Actually, I was embarrassed because I voted twice for George Bush.
Okay.
All right. I had retired from work in 2006, and shortly after that, I started listening to your Mirror America, and I realized that I guess I was sleeping. I was so busy in my work and stuff, I wasn't really looking at the issues and really finding out what was going on in our country. And the more I got educated, the more I realized, I've been asleep at the switch, so I changed to Democrat. And I actually already voted for Obama in early voting to make sure I got that to count.
Good on you, John. I'm curious, when you voted for Bush, were you the classic low-information voter, somebody who's just so busy they're not paying attention? Or was there some particular policy or point of his that resonated with you?
It was just ignorance, I think. I was so busy with work, and I came from a Republican family, and I always kind of like trusted and thought, well, that's the way I'll go, because it was through ignorance, I guess. And boy, when I finally retired and got the time, I thought, what have I been doing? And now I'm an advocate on the other side now.
Good on you, John. Just inertia. Thanks a lot for the call. I love hearing these stories. Jeff in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hey, listening on WINS. Hey, Jeff.
Yeah, hey, thanks for letting me on. I called before, and you're very gracious, with dialogue and everything. I did vote for Bush twice. Mm-hmm. I'm actually a disgruntled fiscal conservative. But unfortunately for you, I'm not voting for Obama because I don't believe entitlement programs ever die. And
I don't think people want them. I agree with you. They don't die because the people want them.
And people that go against them are demonized. For example, Bush even tried to make the warning. Just remember, he may try to make the warning about Social Security going belly up. And, the seniors were scared out of their minds by the Democrats. But remember, who taxed Social Security benefits? It was Bill
Clinton. It was Reagan.
It was also Bill Clinton. Who
You're talking about the Republican Congress that passed legislation taxing Social Security benefits. Yes, that was
okay.
That was during the Reagan administration.
I know.
When the Republicans controlled the majority of Congress. Tax bills have to originate in the House of Representatives. They don't originate with the president.
And it was Reagan
who doubled the Social Security tax, Jeff, if you want to get into that. But the point is that entitlement programs like Social Security and Medicare are around because people want them. You know, the idea of a fundamental social safety net, just a basic, you know, you're not going to fall through this into abject poverty, living on the street with a shopping cart and a sleeping bag. That's something that most Americans consider to be an American value.
I understand. What's going to happen is, what I see is, you know, I know it sounds compassionate, give children health care universally, then then it becomes everyone deserves what the senators get, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I'm of the philosophy, and I understand how you think that FDR came in as a hero and he got us out of the Great Depression, but it really started to get bad when he was elected, and I seriously believe that his policies kept us in the Great Depression. It was actually World War II that got us out. I know, though, that, you know, you're focused on labor and all that, unions, et cetera, and you're under that belief that
Jeff, we were already. Suggest that you go back and, you know, thank you for your point. I mean, this is an old Republican talking point. It goes back to the days when my dad was a kid. And that what got us out of World War II got us out of the Great Depression was World War II. It simply ain't true. You know, the bottom of the Great Depression was 1933, 1934. It was the first year that Roosevelt was president. They just dumped this thing in his lap, and he fixed it. And by the time we got into World War II, we were well out of the Great Depression. We were moving in a very, very positive direction. And I would submit to you, and just common sense would indicate, that World War II slowed down our emergence from the Great Depression. And the reason why is very simple. Those who are old enough to remember certainly know this. I'm not, but I'm old enough to have my father have told me the stories, and my grandfather, that during World War II, virtually all U.S. production, I mean, literally pantyhose was rationed, butter was rationed, sugar was rationed, so that it could go off to the troops. So all those things in the United States, all this money that could have built schools, that could have built bridges, that could have built infrastructure, that could have built schools and hospitals, that was, in fact, taking us out of the Great Depression, was converted into building bombs and bombers and guns and tanks that got left in Europe, that got destroyed. In other words, in today's dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars of wealth was ruined by being dropped on Europe and on Japan. And that actually that led to the recessions that Eisenhower had. Rachel Maddow coming up next.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Welcome back to the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Program here on Air America Radio, 34 minutes past the hour. And the inimitable, the extraordinary, the wonderful Rachel Maddow of the Rachel Maddow Show on MSNBC and the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America is in the studio in New York with us. I'm in the studio here in Portland, but it may sound like we're sitting next to each other. Hey, Rachel.
Hi, Tom. You can imitate me if you want. I'm very imitable.
Inimitable. Okay. Yeah, you know, that's a word that I've used for years, and it never occurred to me what the root of it was.
I assume it means a person who cannot be imitated.
I always thought of it as somebody who could never be surpassed, but I guess imitated would be the same thing. In any case, you're welcome.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Talk me down here. I've got all this information. I mean, you know, Mark Crispin Miller, I don't know if you're on his list, but I, you know, every day I'm getting emails from Mark Miller, and he's a great guy and an old friend, and we've written forwards for each other's books, and you know, he's solid. Troops are going to run out of time to cast their ballots. It looks like maybe 600,000 service members will not essentially be allowed to vote this year. On the other hand, in the 2000 election, we had a member of Congress, a Republican from Indiana, trying to track down his name here, who Steve Beyer, who physically got the, you know, the illegally actually got post-dated military votes into Florida that pushed Bush over, if you really believe that story. And Gore didn't challenge it because he didn't want to sound like he was challenging the vote. We've got people like Congressman Peter King. I don't know if you remember this. Peter King was talking with Nancy Pelosi's daughter. What's her name? Alexandra Pelosi?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and this was the day of the election, right? The day of the election of 2004. It was the afternoon. And he was a little drunk, and she had a camera on him. She was doing her little documentary. And he said, it's all over except the counting, and we'll take care of the counting. In fact, here he is.
It's already over. The election's over. We won.
How do you know that?
It's all over but the counting, and we'll take care of the counting.
It's all over but the counting, and we'll take care of the counting. This was at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, Eastern time, election day. Tell me this thing isn't going to get stolen.
I'm the wrong person to talk you down on this, Tom. I'm sorry. We're both going to join hands and leap off this ledge together. I have to say that I feel I recognize that that it is not a mainstream position to believe that John McCain is going to end up president after this election, but I do worry about it. One, because I think that he could win fair and square. I think that if he won all the toss-up states and he got one other lean Obama state, he probably wins. I mean, that's the way it works. And toss-up states really are toss-ups. So if there is some sort of tide that's not being measured by the polls, that is going to push things in a generic way towards John McCain, then he can be within shooting distance. But then, you know, I worry about the fact that we've seen 6, 7, 8, 9 hour lines in early voting. And early voting doesn't exactly translate to election day voting because it's different polling places and in some cases different rules and all sorts of things. But if we're looking at 130 million people turning out to vote, even if somebody isn't trying to steal the election, people will be disenfranchised because they cannot bear the cost of that many hours to wait in line to vote in some cases.
You know, this is a meme that you laid out on your show a few nights ago, and I thought was brilliant. I know a number of people have picked up on it, but to the best of my knowledge, you were the first person to put this out, that this is in effect a poll tax.
Yeah.
And it caused me to look up Harper versus Virginia. This was the 1966 U.S. Supreme Court case that actually finally put a nail in the coffin of poll taxes and said, no, they're illegal. They're violations of the 14th Amendment. And I just want to share with you a couple of sentences from this I think you'll find interesting. When we think of it in these terms, particularly their use of the word lines, because they're talking about lines as in legal lines, but think about physical lines. This is from the summary, which was written by whoever wrote the summary. I'll get to that in a second. Anyhow, once a franchise is granted to the electorate, lines which determine who may vote may not be drawn so as to cause invidious discrimination. Lines drawn on the basis of wealth or property, like those of race, are traditionally disfavored. Classification which might impinge on fundamental rights and liberties, such as the franchise, must be closely scrutinized. And then here, this is Mr. Justice Douglas delivering the opinion in the court. He says, we conclude a citizen, a qualified voter, is no more nor no less so because he lives in a city or on a farm. This is the clear and strong command of our Constitution's Equal Protection Clause. This is an essential part of the concept of a government of laws and not men. This is the heart of Lincoln's vision of government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Wouldn't it be, Rachel Maddow, the same thing to say a person is no more or less qualified to vote because they live in an inner city or an African-American neighborhood as opposed to a white suburb? Because what we're seeing is in the white suburbs, it takes 15 minutes to vote, and in the inner city African-American neighborhoods, and this has been going on for a decade or longer, it takes hours to vote.
That's exactly right, that we've got locally administered, locally financed elections so that places that have less money have less resources to devote, and the officials that are in a position to allocate shared resources, either at the county level or at the congressional district level or at the state level, tend to make these decisions in ways that either benefit their party or that are discriminatory for other reasons. If you base your allocation of voting machines and poll workers, for example, on previous turnout in other elections, or if you base it on the number of registrations in previous elections, you may not account for the fact that there's going to be a whole hell of a lot of more African Americans voting this year because there is an African American candidate for president. And so we may be looking at a situation in which the system that we have set up to allow people to vote systemically disenfranchises African Americans by underestimating their turnout in an election that is inflected by race because of the hopes and dreams of African Americans.
Particularly in those states,
yeah,
where Republican secretaries of state or Republican systems historically,
yes,
have controlled the vote. This is Paul Weyrich. You're familiar with Paul Weyrich.
Mm-hmm.
The godfather of the American or of the Republican direct mail system, got Ronald Reagan elected, has been active in Republican politics ever since in a big way, worked for George Bush. Paul Weyrich speaking before a group of Republican activists in a church. Just a 20-second clip here.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Ta-da!
Yeah.
Yeah, and thus you have poll taxes. There's a reason that poll taxes in the South were set up to disenfranchise black voters who, in theory, on paper, had the right to vote. And there's a reason that the new poll tax, which is a decrepit election system that causes people to have to take a day off work in order to vote, also disenfranchises people. And the people who are least able to afford to pay are the people who are getting kicked out of the real right to vote.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a concern, and hopefully, if Obama's elected president and we get a supermajority in the House and Senate, we can get a lot done and we can get something fixed about this.
I think that elections should be federalized. I think that it should be a responsibility of the federal government. It isn't something that should depend on local resources. They shouldn't be competing against, you know, funding their first responders locally versus funding elections. I would like to see a federal takeover of elections.
Yeah, the two problems with that are, one, it would be against the Constitution, and two, mm-hmm, would you really want the federal government to be running the constitutions or the elections of George Bush was president?
You know, I would. I actually would, because I want elections to be administered in a technocratic, internationally verifiable way. I think we need to treat ourselves essentially like we're Haiti at this point with our elections, mm-hmm, because of the evidence that we've got that our elections are being stolen.
Yeah.
I mean, I recognize that there are constitutional hurdles here, and obviously you want to do things in a way that brings everybody along, but it's got to be a nonpartisan, technocratic, verifiable system. And
yeah.
I don't know. I at least would love to hear the debate about it.
Yeah, I think the best suggestion is that the Census Bureau be responsible for registering people.
Yes, exactly.
That would be constitutional.
Yeah.
And because they don't, that's not administering the vote. So the Census Bureau is responsible for whether or not you're registered.
Mm-hmm.
And then we know because of HAVA that it is possible for standards to be set for the states. And so let's set standards that, you know, paper trail and anything that has to do with machines are completely transparent and owned by the local governments.
And have it not be not-for-profit. You can't use state secrets to keep people from looking at those things. And frankly, when you submit a change of address card to the postal service, they should forward that to the Census Bureau to forward your voter registration information.
That's right.
It's possible to do it.
And then the states just pull those numbers from the Census Bureau every time.
Or they could do it on their own if they wanted to, but you would think that they would ultimately use the federal system because it would make the most sense. It's the same reason everybody uses the post office.
Yeah. We're talking with Rachel Maddow show on MSNBC and, of course, on here on Air America as well. RachelMaddow.com, her website. Rachel, we have about a minute here. What are the things that you're going to be looking for and your colleagues? I know you're going to be doing election coverage with MSNBC in particular.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be also here on Air America tomorrow night. What are the things that you're going to be looking for as bellwethers? One of the big ones for me is going to be Georgia.
Sure. I mean, in Georgia, we're going to know very early. I think in terms of figuring out who's going to win the election and by how much, everybody's going to be looking at Georgia, North Carolina, Florida, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really going to be looking to see how Mitch McConnell does in Kentucky. I mean, if Mitch McConnell turns out that he's in trouble or if it's going to be a tight race there, I think we're looking at a big Democratic night, not necessarily just a big Obama night.
Although I believe, is John McCain in Kentucky? Did I just hear that? Oh, he's in Tennessee.
In Kentucky was Hillary Clinton.
Oh, really?
Going to campaign against Mitch McConnell. Now, that's a good sign.
That's a very good sign. That's a very good sign. Rachel, always great talking with
you. Tom, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for dropping by. It's 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio. Truth in broadcasting for a change. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at HartmanRadio.com.
And a half minutes before the hour, your radio support group for We the People, the Tom Hartman radio program, and Carl in Monroe, Michigan. Hey, Carl, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tom. It's good to talk to you.
Thanks for calling.
I'm from Monroe, Michigan. I'm a mechanical contractor. I've worked my whole life, and I basically have always voted Republican, and I've changed, and I'm voting straight Democratic because I feel like the Republicans have gutted the middle class.
Yeah, they have. I'm sorry to say. And the reason why, and here's the interesting thing, Carl, is that a middle class is not a normal thing. If you look over 7,000 years of civilized history, what you see is that it is almost always a small, very wealthy, powerful ruling class and a very, very large working class, a very large but very poor working class. You know, it's Scrooge and Marley. We see Christmas Carol, you know, the show, we see the movie, the book by what's his name, the essence of it is, Mr. Marley or Mr. Scrooge, may I have, you know, a lump of coal, please? No, you may not. Can Tiny Tim please have some, you know, it's Bob Cratchit, right? Can Tiny Tim please have some health care? No, he can't. I can't afford it. And Scrooge was actually kind of the small middle class of England. He was a small businessman with one employee. But there wasn't much of a middle class, and because middle classes aren't normal. And Franklin Roosevelt created a middle class in the United States by empowering unions, by providing a minimum wage, by providing unemployment insurance, and Lyndon Johnson added to that by providing Medicare, by, you know, health insurance programs. And the countries of Europe and Japan have taken that a whole step farther and said, we're going to build a strong social safety net below which nobody can fall so that we will guarantee a middle class. And yeah, the rich aren't going to get quite as rich as they might otherwise, but this is better for democracy. And it's an idea that is anathema to the Republicans. The Republicans don't want to have anything to do with it.
Well, there's one thing I always tell my friends, that most of them are Republicans, who I say, when I paid taxes, I made money. And even though I'm not paying taxes now very much, I'm not making any money. I'd rather, you know, have that over my head to have to pay that than because the economy is usually rolling when you have to pay taxes. And yeah, you're out there earning a living and moving forward. You know, I'm worried about my grandkids.
Right.
You know,
and I think we need to remember, you know, Thomas Paine's point. And thank you, Carl, for the call. Thomas Paine made the point that what you make with your labor, with your hands or with your mind, is arguably yours, and that's something that should not be taxed and should be yours. And originally, income taxes didn't really start hitting people until they got rich. But then he went on to say those people who are making things as a consequence of society, by the institutions of society, you know, there's moving money around, things like that, in the proportion to which that they earn money, they owe that some portion of that money back to society in taxes. And it's just a way of looking at it that is so lost, you know. Bernard in South Carolina. Hey, Bernard, what's up?
Well,
WOIC.
The public opinion. opinion polls are inherently inaccurate, and I'm afraid a lot of our people are going to be screaming on Wednesday morning the election was stolen. We Democrats wear buttons on our lapels, put bumper stickers on our cars, yard signs in the yard, try to persuade our coworkers and co-religionists to vote for our guy or gal. The type of person who's going to vote for McCain, who voted for Reagan twice and the Bushies three times, that type of person refuses to answer questions at exit polls, refuses to take part in telephone surveys at their home, refuses to tell anybody except their closest friends who they're going to support. So when you talk about how the polls have Obama up by so many points, that does not take into account the people who are going to vote but refuse to participate in the opinion poll surveys.
Yeah, yeah. It's Bernard, I get it, but I think that they're factoring that stuff out. I hope. I hope. We'll see. I'm actually very optimistic. I'm very optimistic. Stacy in Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening to WTKG. Hey, Stacy, what's up?
Hey there, Tom. How are you?
Just great, but I'll get better. How about you?
Yeah, I'll get better, too. I listen to you every day, but I don't necessarily consider myself a Democrat. I did vote for George Bush in the last two elections. And the main thing for my wife and me is that we see the Democrats standing up, and this is what we like about the Democrats, standing up for the underdog and the little people of the
world. Average working person.
Yeah. And, you know, they're the ones who push through, equal rights for people of different races and the civil rights movement and all that. And that is what we love about the Democrats. And so much about, we were both raised Republican, and so much about the Republicans seem to be stingy, greedy even, and the one thing that has always pulled us over that way has been the quote-unquote pro-life stance that they have. But we become more and more embittered, basically, toward them because even though they say they're pro-life, they're pro-death penalty, and they're pro-war. At least that's how we see them.
Well, and in addition to that, their economic policies have stripped away from people the ability to get a good education, which is one of the things that reduces unwanted pregnancy, they've been anti-birth control in many areas, which increases unwanted pregnancies. I mean, the bottom line is
the reason I'm calling in today, though, is because I want to know how the Democratic Party, who I think stands up for human rights, and who are the ones who are the compassionate group, and I want to be a Democrat for that reason, or I want to vote Democratic. And we have a guy here in Michigan, in Grand Rapids, named Dean, who is Robert Dean, who is a pro-life Democrat. And I just, is there any way you can explain to me how the Democrats haven't grabbed onto the fighting for the unborn?
Well, there are a lot of pro-life Democrats. There's a whole movement of pro-life Democrats. I'm sorry I don't have the website right off the tip of my head. I know that there's a pro-life, pro-Obama.com, I think it is. But there is, serious pro-life Democrats out there too, Stacey. It's a small piece of the whole thing.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the second hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you. And Ron Reagan on the line with us, the star of the Ron Reagan Show on Air America Radio. And Ron, I always used to enjoy being a guest on your show when you were doing a show in Seattle. Thanks for being a guest on my show.
Hey, I'm happy to return the favor.
I understand that you have now officially endorsed Barack Obama.
That's right. It never really occurred to me that I needed to or anybody would care to hear me officially endorse Barack Obama. I thought it had been pretty obvious now for some months who I was supporting. Mm-hmm. But my producer, Logan, said that, you should just officially endorse. So I thought, oh, well, okay, there we go. I'll officially endorse. There's
and it made headlines. Just like Dick Cheney's official endorsement, you know?
If I'd known it was going to make headlines, I'd have, you know, thought more carefully about how I did it. I really thought it was kind of an offhand thing. But
there you go. Yeah. Over the weekend, I was driving around here in Portland, and I was listening to, I just tuning around on the radio, and I hit one of the local right-wing stations that was replaying Hannity's show from Friday. And he had this segment where he sent a producer down to Madison Square Garden, and they would just grab... I mean, grabbing people who were inarticulate by and large, and one guy who was quite drunk, you know, he was trying to do theater, but, and they kept saying, do you think that from each according to his means to each according to his needs is a good idea? And everybody was saying, yeah. And, you know, and then he'd say, did you know that Karl Marx said that? And, you know, half the people said, who's he? You know, isn't he the congressman
one
from
of the
Kentucky
brothers?
Or something?
Yeah,
right. But the point of it is that I am of the opinion, Ron Reagan, that when John McCain started going in front of groups and saying, that Barack Obama, he wants to spread the wealth, a whole lot of Americans are looking at John McCain, knowing he's worth $100 million and he's got, you know, what, 9 houses and 13 cars or whatever it is and a private jet that his wife owns. They're looking at him going, well, maybe he wants to spread your wealth, but, you know, I wouldn't be so opposed to that.
Well, exactly. I mean, I had the same thought, really, that most of the people, these Joe the Plumbers, you know, so to speak, that he's speaking to at these rallies, these are not wealthy people. And, you know, Barack Obama or anybody else talks about spreading the wealth. He's talking about spreading it in their direction. So why would they object to that?
Right. And in fact, the quote, which I'm astounded that the corporate media has not even had the common courtesy to play in context. Mm-hmm. There were two sentences that preceded his, you know, if we spread the wealth around, it'll be good for everybody.
Yeah.
One was words to the effect of, I'm going to give even small businesses a tax cut and everybody who makes under $250,000 is going to get it. And the other was everybody who makes under $250,000 is going to get a tax cut. That's the wealth he was talking about spreading around. In other words, what he was saying is, we're going to get more money into the hands of the middle class and the working class, and we're going to get more money into the hands of small businesses by reducing their taxes. And that wealth being spread around America is going to stimulate the economy. That was what he was saying. Yep. And I agree with that. I think most people would agree with that. And I really think that John McCain has been sinking in the polls because he's been pushing a meme, a thought virus, an idea, which is antithetical to the American perspective.
Well, I agree with you completely. I don't think that's the only reason he's sinking in the polls, but I do think that backfired on him, as so many other, you know, kind of faux populist memes, as you put it, have. I mean, there is no civilized country with a progressive tax system that doesn't spread the wealth. That's what a progressive tax system does. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you pay taxes and a road gets built, everybody gets to drive on the road. That's spreading the wealth. You know, the whole thing was really just absurd.
Yeah, it really was. The other meme that is out there that is being promoted that I want to push back on like crazy is this meme that, or this thought virus, that the American people want a divided Congress.
Mm-hmm.
That a divided Congress is a good thing. If we had a divided Congress in the 30s, we would not have had the New Deal and we'd still be in the Great Depression. Lyndon Johnson had 63 seats in the United States Senate held by Democrats in the 62 election.
Mm-hmm.
And so in 1963 and 1964, those 2 years that he was, or a year and a half, you know, Kennedy was assassinated at the end of 63, November 22nd of 63. But in 64, LBJ was actually able to get a lot done because he had a united Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, they ran ads about it. LBJ, he starts out in this, he's talking about, you know, what a terrible tragedy it was that Kennedy died, and we made promises. John Kennedy made promises on behalf of our party, the American people, and I kept those promises. And then here's the voiceover from this ad from 1964.
Promises made that November day were strong promises. One by one, they have been kept. An $11 billion tax cut proposed by President Kennedy was signed into law by President Johnson on February 26th. The president sought and won support from both parties in passing a bill to fulfill our founding fathers' commitment that every American have his full constitutional rights. The anti-poverty bill expressed the president's and the people's determination to eliminate poverty from the richest nation in the world.
It would have been filibustered.
It was signed on August 20th.
Would have been filibustered.
Led by the president, Congress passed five significant bills on education, more than any other Congress in recent history.
Would have been filibustered.
The president signed the Wilderness Bill, saving threatened areas of natural beauty.
Would have been filibustered.
He signed new legislation attacking the problems of transportation and housing in our cities.
Would have been filibustered.
New programs to help ensure the farmer a fair reward for his labor.
Would have been filibustered.
In fact, 45 major bills were passed.
Four, it would have been, and it goes on from there, actually. Yep. That's only half the ad. You know, with the legislative accomplishments, all of which would have been filibustered and will be filibustered in this Congress if they don't get 60 seats. We need to be doing everything we can to make sure that we get 60 seats in the Senate.
Yes, I agree. I don't know that we're going to quite get there, although there is a chance. I think we're probably going to end up more like 57, 58, maybe even 59. But it's amusing to hear Republicans talk about how, you know, really it would be better if we had divided government. It was only 8 years ago and more recently, in fact, that Karl Rove, the architect of the Bush administration's political machine, was talking about having a permanent Republican majority in government as far out as you could see.
Right. And how good that would be.
Yeah. And what a great thing that would be. And now, of course, they're just hoping that somehow they can get a divided Congress.
I am of the opinion, Ron Reagan, that one of the very first things that the Democrats should do is exercise the nuclear option.
Hmm.
I don't see any value, frankly, to the rule, and it's simply a rule. It's not in the Constitution. It wasn't even envisioned by the founders. That 60 votes in the Senate can block legislation. It should be a majority only.
Yeah, I can understand that point of view. You know, it's be careful what you wish for, though, because there will come a day when there's a Republican majority again.
But that majority
you may,
rules.
I hope for that filibuster possibility then. I don't know. I'm a little wary of changing rules like that.
You think that the Senate should be
the 57, 58, 59. I think that'll probably be good enough. I think we'd probably be able to pick off a few Republicans, Olympia Snowes, Chuck Hagels, whoever, that would not go along with filibuster in many instances.
You grew up in a political family. I mean, your father was the president of the United States, Ronald Reagan, and have seen this from the inside in a way that very few Americans have ever had the opportunity to see. What's your sense of what must be going on in the campaigns right now, and what's your sense of what must be going on in the White House, in the Bush White House right now?
Boy, I wouldn't want to speculate on the Bush White House too much, although I imagine that there is, at this point in a presidency, after two terms, there's fatigue. For one thing, I mean, it's been a long 8 years, no matter, you know, whether you've done a good job or the, you know, horrible job that President Bush has done. There's fatigue. A lot of people have left. There are unfamiliar faces around you, all of a sudden because new people have come in to replace the old familiar faces. There's a certain sense of nostalgia, a sense of relief, I think, to some extent, because you know that in a few months you get to go home and people won't be in your face every day, you know, demanding things of you. Likewise on the McCain campaign, I think. I think you see signs of it now with McCain out on the trail, that he realizes there's really nothing much more he can do, and that this is almost over. This marathon that he's been engaged in is almost over, and a sense of relief and buoyancy almost begins to take over. On the Obama side, there's some of that, of course, because they realize the campaign is just about to end. They must feel optimistic because it looks like they're going to win. But also hanging over all of that is the knowledge that if we do win, you know, I'm going to be the next president of the United States. And that is a huge, huge responsibility, and it must weigh on it.
What a mess he's inheriting as well.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
Ron Reagan, The Ron Reagan Show on Air America Radio. Ron, thanks so much for dropping by.
It's my pleasure, Tom, and we'll be talking together tomorrow.
Indeed. I look forward to it. Always, always a pleasure talking with you, Ron. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's the place where progressives come to party. The number one progressive program in all of talk radio. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio, 21 minutes past the hour. And Dan Pfeiffer is with us. He is the campaign communications director for the Barack Obama campaign, barackobama.com, of course, their website. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tom. How are you doing?
Just great. Just great. But I'll be a whole lot better day after tomorrow.
Me too.
Dan, what, you know, you're talking right now to more or less 3 million people, maybe a little more. What can we do? What do you need us to do at this point? Obviously, get out and vote. But, you know, beyond that, what does the campaign need?
For your listeners, what we need is we need people to vote. We need them to get their friends, their family to vote. And if they have people, you know, in your lives, in your workplace, in your school, who are still undecided, you need to do everything you can to convince them to get out there. And then, and this is incredibly important, we're expecting tremendous turnout tomorrow, historic turnout. What we need is that people to, when they get there, to stay in line. If you were in line before the polls close, you will get to vote. And so stay in line. It may be a real pain. May be there a while, but this, we cannot pass up this opportunity.
Yeah. And if people encounter problems when they go to vote, if somebody is challenged by, you know, some guy who asserts himself to be a Republican lawyer or whatever, and he says, I don't think that you should be allowed to vote, or show me your ID, or they, it turns out that their name isn't on the voter rolls or whatever. Or say they try a voting machine, and we've had reports now from, I think, over 22 counties where people push the Obama button and it flips to McCain. We have none that are verified where it goes the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
If anything like that happens, what should people do?
Well, I think there are two things. If you hear about things like that happen, you should go on our website, barackobama.com, and there's a place where you can send information like that back up to the campaign.
Okay.
But second, if you were there and someone is challenging your vote, no one can stop you from voting. If the machine doesn't work, fill out a provisional ballot. If they challenge you, insist on voting.
But a provisional ballot, I mean, in Ohio right now, as we speak,
mm-hmm.
there are over 100,000 provisional ballots from the 2004 election, which have yet to be opened.
Right. I would certainly say a provisional ballot is not your best chance, but if that machine doesn't work or you have questions about it, make sure that you get your vote recorded somewhere.
Right. And if the machine doesn't work, I would think that it would be a good idea to look on the back of it and write down the serial number.
That is one option, but I think your primary responsibility should be when you get out of there needs to be to make sure that if you have voted. Don't wait in that long line and walk out and have someone, whether it's a Republican or some sort of elections official who doesn't know what they're doing or a faulty machine, keep you from voting.
Right. We're talking with Dan Pfeiffer, the communications director for the Obama campaign, barackobama.com, of course, the website. Dan, as communications director, it seems to me that John McCain is running around saying, Barack Obama wants to spread the wealth. And, of course, we all know, you actually listen to the whole five-minute conversation with Joe the Plumber. What Barack Obama said was, we're going to cut taxes on small businesses. We're going to cut taxes on people making less than $250,000 a year. That's going to produce more wealth with the middle class. As that wealth gets spread through the economy, it's going to be a good thing for the economy. I mean, that was the essence of what he said.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that most people, even most kind of Joe Sixpack people, get that. And my belief is that every time John McCain goes out there and says he wants to spread the wealth, all across America there are people going, huh, sounds like a good idea to me.
Well, what I think you're seeing is there are two philosophies here about the economy. One is the John McCain, George Bush economy, which is economic philosophy, is where you give tax cuts to the very, very wealthy, to corporations, under the hope that prosperity will trickle down. That's what we've done for the last 8 years.
And right, it creates a nation of...
Exactly, and it has not worked.
Yeah.
And then you have the philosophy that Barack Obama and a lot of Democrats running for the House and Senate this year are advocating, which is a bottom-up philosophy where you try and help everyone. You want to help the middle class. You want to help working people. You want to... I mean, basically under the Barack Obama plan, if you make less than $250,000, if you make $250,000 and more, you'll see your tax rates reverse back to before the Bush tax cuts. If you make less than $200,000, you're going to get a tax cut.
Right.
And if you're between
$200,000 and $250,000, nothing's going to happen.
Nothing's going to happen.
Right. And that was the one thing, you know, the infomercial said $200,000, and that spread between 200 and 250 where nothing happens. That, you know, McCain thought he, aha! You know,
yeah, that's right. Apparently there's a penalty for precision and accuracy these days.
I guess, yeah. Gee, when you tell the truth, you get nailed.
That's absolutely right.
It's totally bizarre.
But I will say that I think on this issue, I think you're right that voters are not, are very wise to what McCain is talking about here. And I think that since you've seen his Joe the Plumber spread the wealth argument, the polls have not changed. In fact, in many cases, they've gone stronger for Barack Obama.
Well, I think people are saying, okay, John McCain's worth $100 million. Obviously, he doesn't want his wealth spread around. Joe the Plumber now has a book agent and a book deal, and he's trying to do a TV show. And, you know, he's trying to become rich, obviously. You know, if he becomes a multimillionaire, he doesn't want his wealth spread around. In other words, he doesn't want his taxes raised. So, but you know, I'm going to be making, you know, $50,000 a year for the rest of my life, and I'd like to have, you know, my taxes cut.
I think that's right. I think people see that, you know, there's one candidate in this race who will stand up for middle class families, and that's certainly not John McCain.
Yeah, and nor has he ever. In fact, his long voting record in the United States Senate is the exact opposite of that.
Dan Pfeiffer,
the Obama campaign communications director, BarackObama.com. Dan, you have done a marvelous job.
I appreciate it, Tom. Thank you to your listeners for all your help.
You and the campaign have just been spectacular. Thanks a lot for dropping by.
Thank you.
Great talking with you. We'll be up with your calls next, 866-303-2270, TomHartmann.com for our live chat room, AirAmerica.com for our free streaming video. Stick around, 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program. Call 866-303-2270.
My ballot go, whoa, whoa. Lost my faith in the government when they changed the rules without my consent. Don't wanna be nobody's experiment. Just wanna know where my ballot went. They lost my vote.
34 minutes past the hour.
Does anybody care?
On the talk show for the sane among us, the Tom Hartmann Radio Program. Yes, well, you may remember back in 2007, early 2007, after she was elected governor of Alaska, Sarah Palin was being shopped around to radio stations around the country by the right-wing PR companies at Bill Kristol's behest, apparently. And she ended up on KDKA in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where she had the following interview. This is Sarah Palin a year and a half ago.
I guess the inevitable question now, considering where you are and how you got here, when will you be running for president?
President of the PTA, maybe?
Don't be coy, young lady. We both know you know you're a hot property, so when will you be running for president?
Oh, shush. I'm going to tell my kids that and they'll laugh. Yeah.
You still haven't answered it, though.
I can't answer. I'll play political and not answer.
Officer, what? Political what?
So, anyhow, you get a sense of how Sarah Palin actually talks on the phone, which kind of gives some credibility. In fact, her campaign has confirmed that this is real. This, her being pranked by CKOI, the Mask Avenger.
Yes, hello, Governor Palin.
Hello, this is Sarah. How are you?
Fine, and you? This is Nicolas Sarkozy speaking. How are you?
Oh, so good. It's so good to hear you. Thank you for calling us. Nicholas, we so appreciate this opportunity.
You know, I see you as a president one day, you too.
Maybe in 8 years.
Well, I hope for you. You know, we have a lot in common because personally, one of my favorite activities is to hunt, too.
Oh, very good. We should go hunting together.
Exactly. We could go try hunting by helicopter like you did. I never did that. Like we see in French, on pourrait tuer des bébés phoques aussi.
Well, I think we could have a lot of fun together as we're getting work done. We can kill two birds with one stone that way.
I just love killing those animals. Mm-mm. Take away a life. That is so fun. I'd really love to go as long as we don't bring Vice President Cheney.
No, I'll be a careful shot. Yes.
Yes.
You know, I look forward to working with you and getting to meet you personally and your beautiful wife. Oh, my goodness.
Thank you very much. You know, my wife, Carla, would love to meet you. You know, even though she was a bit jealous that I was supposed to speak to you today.
I think he's going to talk about the, is this the hustler thing, Nailin Palin?
Well, give her a big hug from me.
You know, my wife is a popular singer and a former hot top model, and she's so hot in bed. She even wrote a song for you.
Oh, my goodness, I didn't know that.
Yes, in French, it's called Du Rouge à Lèvres sur une cochonne, or if you prefer in English, Joe the Plumber. I just want to be sure, I don't quite understand the phenomenon Joe the Plumber. That's not your husband, right?
That's not my husband, but he's a normal American who just works hard and doesn't want government to take his money.
Yes, yes, I understand. We have the equivalent of Joe the Plumber in France. It's called Marcel, the guy with bread under his armpit.
Right. That's what it's all about, is the middle class. You're a very good example for us here.
I love the documentary they made on your life. You know, Hustlers Nailin Palin?
Hustlers Nailin Palin?
Oh, good. Thank you. Yes.
That was really edgy.
Well, good.
I really loved you. And I must say something also, Governor. You've been pranked.
Yeah, and that's where she got it, where that she'd been pranked. But, you know, I still think that her interview on KDKA was pretty good.
No. I don't want to sound like a politician.
Sure. Okay, then when will you be running for president?
I can't answer that, though.
Can you imagine this woman staring down Vladimir Putin?
I don't know what happened in life.
So, okay. Our Twilight Zone. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Daniel, listening in Los Angeles on K-Talk, you think Barack Obama is similar to Malcolm X? Do I have that right, Daniel?
The slick centrist position that he's faking. But I'm a former stockbroker, and I think that we're entering a cyclical economic depression that's worse than 1929 due to the $10 trillion national debt. Now, if Barack Obama wins on Wednesday, November 5th, you're going to see an avalanche of corporate layoffs due to the Barack Obama corporate tax plan. If John McCain wins, you're going to see civil unrest by the progressives and others. And when the bombing of Iran begins by Israel and Bush, then you're going to see tremendous political fallout in this country, which is likely to create a King George Bush.
Yeah. Daniel, you raise a whole bunch of interesting points, and none of those right now on this day at this time are roads I want to travel down. I'm sorry. It's just not going to go there. Matt in Lawrence, Kansas. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Tom. Good to talk to you.
Thanks.
I'm a big fan. I'm actually was so far to the right in 2000 that I was supporting Alan Keyes in the Republican primaries.
Holy cow, man.
And now I'm a proud liberal, so.
Well, you thank you for setting aside the Kool-Aid.
I just wanted to talk. You had Rachel to talk you down, and I thought she did a pretty lousy job of doing that on the polling.
we joked about it on the air before we went on. I said, shall I talk you down? And she said, well, you know, it's not going to work very well. You know, and I said, okay, you can talk me down. And she said, okay, you know, but we're both frankly very concerned about this.
Well, I would say don't be, because what I'm seeing when I'm looking at the polls, turnout, regardless of age bracket, tends to be about 82% of registered voters.
Right.
And so the huge youth registration we're seeing is actually going to make those polls, which are based mostly off of old, outdated voter turnout models, not right.
Right. Also, I've seen yesterday, I forget where it was, I think it might have been at 583 or 586 or whatever it is .com, there was the first, actually no, it was at thinkprogress.org, was the first analysis of polls that were able to get, however they do it by hook or crook, lists of cell phone users versus polls that don't. And the cell phone user polls were showing 10, 11, 12 point leads for Obama. The non-cell phone ones were 5, 6, 7 point leads. And I think, Matt, that has something to do with it. If you go back to the Harry Truman poll, that's the most famous screw-up of polling. And those polls showed that Truman was ahead by 3 or 4 points, that Dewey was ahead by 3 or 4 points. And, in fact, Truman won by 3 or 4 points. It was like a 7 or 8 point spread. It was huge. And the reason why was because that was the first year that the pollsters abandoned walking door to door to do their polling, and they used this newfangled thing called the telephone. Well, at that point in time, in 1948, not all Americans had telephones. And, in fact, not even the majority of Americans had telephones. And the people who did have at least single-line telephones, there were a lot of people who had party-line phones, but to be able to zero in on a single person, to have a single-line telephone in 1948, they were basically only polling the affluent. And the affluent were going overwhelmingly for the Republican. And so that poll was off. You know, they suggest that they have learned from that, but I have a feeling that this time around we may be seeing a very similar problem to the Dewey Truman one, and again weighting heavily toward the Democrat. We'll see. Matt in Springfield, Mass, listening to WHMP. Hey, Matt, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I was wondering that little bit that you do, a day in the life of Joe Republican.
Yeah.
Is that something you came up with, or is that
no? A guy named Nathan Gray wrote that. The cleanest original copy of it is over at michaelmoore.com. If you go into Google and just type Joe Republican in Google, there are a thousand variations on it out there now. Some of them, you know, wildly embellished. And, you know, it's just a great piece. It's just a great piece, and it's easy to track down. So that's how you do it, Matt. Thanks a lot for the call. Greg in L.A. Hey, Greg.
Hey, I'd like to say hello to all of the listeners, and I'd like to say hello to you too, Tom.
Thanks, Greg.
All this election talk that's going on reminds me of the thought that elections generally are won and lost before Election Day. And likewise, democracy is won and lost after Election Day. I don't know who said that, but I think it applies still.
Mm-hmm.
And after Election Day, if regardless of who wins, if the corporations want to do something and lay a bunch of people off, if Obama wins, or if McCain wins.
You know, the reality, let me just push back on that earlier caller. If you look over the last 100 years, what you find is that during Democratic administrations, the stock market goes up more than it does during Republican administrations. And the return on investments are always better during Democratic administrations than Republican administrations. And professional stockbrokers and professional investors know this. I think, frankly, if Obama wins, that there will be a spike in a short-term spike in the stock market. But then the president and his plunge protection team and all these things that these guys have been doing to prevent an economic disaster, to try and hold it off until Election Day, they've been artificially driving down gasoline prices, artificially driving up the stock market. And I think that stuff is going to fall apart because we do have serious structural problems that are the result of 26 years of Reaganomics.
Well, for one reason or the other, whether it's economic, more economic disturbance or the civil, you know, quote unquote unrest, I think that needs to be done, civil unrest, to preserve democracy in this country.
No, Greg, I agree with you. And, you know, if McCain, quote, wins, end quote, and there's widespread evidence of election theft, I think that we just need to have a nationwide sit down strike.
Remember the 5th of November. The gunpowder treason and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at HartmanRadio.com.
Transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. 9.5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Our program brought to you in part by the Teamsters, proud supporters of the Employee Free Choice Act. Teamster.org is their website. Check it out. And Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com on the line. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom.
So what's going on?
Oh, it's a quiet day. No, not really. Actually, I'm in the White House, and it is a very quiet day because...
You're in the White House.
I'm in the White House. I'm doing pool reporting today for the president. As, you know, people do, we get to follow the president around from public event to public event as part of the
deal. He's doing public events? I thought he was hiding.
Exactly.
Oh, therefore it's a quiet day.
It's a very quiet day. He has no public events at all. He's completely invisible, as he basically has been for the last couple of weeks.
Hey, do you think that that day that he supposedly choked on the pretzel, that he was just smashed drunk and fell over?
I think that he probably choked down a pretzel.
Have you ever known anybody in your whole entire life who choked on a pretzel?
No, I really haven't. But maybe he had three in his mouth at the same time. Maybe he was being greedy.
I don't know. Anyhow, I saw W, and I thought, you know, Oliver Stone makes pretty good movies. That one didn't ring my bell. Some people liked it, but I thought it was, well, in any case, it's kind of a tragic presidency. There's got to be a sense of Schadenfreude or something, you know, around the White House right now. Just the lost opportunity, blown opportunities, sort of the story of his life in so many ways.
They won't admit to that, but I'm quite sure that there is. I mean, there were so many things they came in wanting to do, and they were hit with one thing after another thing, and their responses to it were just not the responses that the country needed.
Dick Cheney yesterday, or day before yesterday, endorsed John McCain,
yes.
And I'm guessing that he did not really plan on or didn't realize or whatever that this would become a national story. I think it was just, you know, he was in Wyoming, and Wyoming is, you know, 90% crazy red, or whatever percentage it is. And he just didn't think it was going to go any farther than that, and it did. Any response from the White House now on the fact that this is being used aggressively by Barack Obama both in his commercials and in his speeches?
It didn't come up in the briefing today. My response to it was, you've got to wonder whether the man is politically tone deaf. I mean, this was the one endorsement that John McCain did not need. And, of course, Barack Obama jumped on it. For him to say that he was delighted to endorse John McCain, it's like Darth Vader coming down and endorsing John McCain. This was dreadful.
Yeah, it really is. You know, it's.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
Oh, Dick, get back.
Okay. Yeah, that's exactly what it was. It was really quite extraordinary. And to wait until now, you weren't sure until now that you were going to endorse John McCain, Dick?
Yeah. No, and it's really amazing. You compare that Darth Vader voice with the actual thing.
Iraq sits on top of 10% of the world's oil reserves. Very significant reserves, second only to Saudi Arabia.
That sounds like Darth Vader.
He does sound like Darth Vader. Darth Vader sounds gooder somehow.
Yeah, a little. You know, the production qualities are a little better with Darth Vader, that's all. So, okay, so you're doing pool reporting for the White House.
I'm doing pool reporting for the White House, which means I've brought a knitting pattern, and I've brought an iPod. And
I'm curious if there's anybody there who believes that John McCain might win.
No. Basically, I don't think there's anybody here who believes John McCain might win. There are people who think that if all the stars align, that it's possible for him to win. But so many stars have to align that you've got to get major astrologers brought in, and you've got to have people...
And you've got to get them loaded, too. I mean, it's...
Yeah, you know, yeah. It's... I mean, it becomes really, really difficult any way that you look at it at this point. I don't think anybody really believes that John McCain is going to win. What we're told is going to happen tomorrow night is that the President and the First Lady will have a small dinner party in the residence, and then they'll watch the returns, and then at some point Dana Perino will come down and she'll make some kind of a statement, or she'll give a readout, depending on how late it goes. Well, I mean, it's not going to go very late, so I imagine she'll make a statement. They're playing the whole thing as low-key as they can because they know that this is very bad news. And they were asked again today in the press briefing as to whether, really, this election was not all about President Bush.
And she's
trying to say that, no, this election is not about President Bush. This election is about the next president. This election is about John McCain.
Yeah, well, I guess you'd expect Dana Perino to say that. I'm wondering if there's any kind of concern or sense in the White House about any of these people going to prison or what kind of investigations may be conducted by Congress in the event that Congress ends up with a Democratic president and a solid majority in the House and Senate.
You know, I don't think that hasn't come up
At least I haven't heard.
Nobody's
asked that question. I think that because Pelosi so far had said that impeachment was off the table,
mm-hmm.
I think that they probably think that everything else is off the table too.
That would be a huge mistake.
For them to think that, you mean?
Well, both for them to think that and for the Democrats to do it. I mean, we have had basically 25 years of presidents not being held accountable by following presidents in the hope that they won't be held accountable by following presidents. And it has to stop. I mean, there has to be some point at which we say you can't break the law, even if you're president.
I think that there are enough people in the Democratic Party in Congress who are going to want to have hearings, whether they go anywhere or not, that we're going to have some very serious hearings. I mean, you can't think that Waxman and others are not going to want to have very serious hearings.
Wexler, who's in a really tough race, by the way, if you're listening in Florida and you can help out Robert Wexler, do it. Dennis Kucinich. There's a number of folks who are, in fact, Dennis Kucinich will be with us about 30 minutes from now on this show. There's a number of people who I think are going to try and hold this administration accountable, and I sure hope that the House and Senate leadership will get on the bandwagon with this thing finally.
I wouldn't hold your breath.
Okay.
Sorry. I just wouldn't.
Well, this is where the 5th of November is when the work really begins. It's where we have to be holding our members of Congress and our new president accountable for the crimes of the previous one. Victoria Jones, TalkRadioNews.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Coming up next, Larissa Alexandrovna. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, the third hour of our program. Just a quick overview of some of the political headlines of the day. This a great summary over at the Huffington Post politics page. John McCain shows up in Tampa, Florida. The campaign prepares for 10,000 people to greet him. About 1,000 show up. The campaign's freaked up. Sarah Palin still has not released her medical records. So there's still a debate about who is Trigg's mom, among other things. The Florida U McCain chairman has resigned and publicly stated that he is voting for Obama. It just doesn't get any weirder than this. With regard to Prop 8 in California, vote no on Prop 8, by the way. Barack Obama has come out and said that Prop 8 is unnecessary. In other words, he's saying vote no on Prop 8 in California. By the way, vote yes on Prop 2. Protect those factory-farmed animals. Franken and Coleman's debate gets nasty, and presidential transition rumors, all this kind of thing. Let's see. Oh, there was one other that I wanted to share with you. Oh, yeah, Palin 2012 has been registered in Alaska. And finally, the hometown newspaper for Dick Cheney's hometown newspaper, has endorsed Barack Obama. Larissa Alexandrovna is with us. She is one of the finest investigative reporters working in the United States or, frankly, anywhere in the world right now. She reports primarily over at rawstory.com. And Larissa, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Always great to have you with us, Larissa. You do such great work. I am so impressed by it. Thanks. You and Muriel Kane have done an extraordinary job with this article titled Documents Reveal How Ohio Routed 2004 Voting Data Through Company That Hosted External Bush Administration Email Accounts. Give me the snapshot.
Well, basically, if you recall, Kenneth Blackwell was the Secretary of State and rather controversial in some of the things he was doing. And what we were able to see in the schematics that we acquired is that the network architecture appears to have allowed for routing of election results in 2004 through a third-party server, and the server being, as you mentioned, the same company that hosted the White House emails that went missing, the GWB43 domain that's now become synonymous with that. And it's not just the White House emails. I mean, this is a highly partisan company that does most of the server work and network work for the GOP. So on election night, the results, the live results are streamed through this third-party server out of the state. So this is the state of Ohio, but it's going through Tennessee and then re-entering the stream of data. And that's what the schematics show us that we were able to obtain.
Now, the reason why this is important is because Steve Spoonamore, the Diebold whistleblower, one of a couple, or correct me if I'm mischaracterizing him.
Right. He's not a, actually not the Diebold whistleblower. He is, although he's mentioned in an article I did with the Diebold whistleblower, he is lifelong Republican, but more importantly, he's one of the leading network security and architecture experts in the United States. He's done government work. He's got high security clearances, and he was, advising unofficially on the McCain campaign before he walked out and said enough is enough. And
right.
So he is considered by everyone I've talked to the leading expert, and I provided these schematics to him, and he was deposed for a larger case relating to this in Ohio, a RICO case about voter disenfranchisement. And adding to that deposition under oath, he provided his expert opinion. In it, he believes that this schematic shows that that there may have been or probably was what's called a man-in-the-middle setup, a structure, a criminal sort of methodology by which a third party inserts itself into a stream of information mimicking the original so that the final, destination doesn't know the difference.
Right. This is a system that's used to basically hack people's PayPal accounts, their bank accounts, whatever.
Sure, sure. And if we put it in, let's say in terms of telephone, which is probably better to understand, let's say I'm calling you and somebody intercepts that call, alters the data in terms of what I say and mimics my voice and then proceeds to allow that to re-enter the stream and you get the call and you think it's me, but it's not.
Yeah, or on the web, if I think I'm logging on to my PayPal account,
right,
and actually I'm logging on to a site that is taking my login information and is itself logging out of my PayPal account and feeding me all my information from my account, and I say, okay, send $1,000 to so-and-so, and it instead, because it's now in my PayPal account, sends $10,000 to itself, and then it sends me back a screen that says, I just sent $1,000 to who you asked. I think everything's fine. They just ripped me off.
Right,
and
right.
That's the man in the middle theft. And so
And basically the schematics show that this, you have, an Ohio election, basically a government website where all other government websites appear to be hosted on Ohio servers. This one is not. And it appears to be, you can see that the data goes out into this third party and then re-enters the stream at certain points.
Right. And wasn't there an anomaly here, Larissa? We're talking with Larissa Alexandrovna of RawStory.com. Wasn't there an anomaly in that toward the end of the evening, all of a sudden, the
right,
Bush vote started really substantially picking up, and that's what flipped Ohio to Bush was the
right
stuff that happened in the evening. And it happened as it was coming down through this data stream back from this server in Tennessee that it was also warehousing the GW Bush 3043 or whatever it is, .com, and the White House servers where all the emails went missing.
Right, right. This sort of covert channel of community.
So this is a pretty smoking gun that stolen in 2004 in Ohio.
I wouldn't say that. I don't think that's that. We could say that at this point. What it is in terms of a smoking gun is proof that for some reason, and Spoonamore says the obvious reason is to create a man in the middle, that election results were first routed in real time to this third party and then reinserted into the stream.
Okay.
And if you look at the timestamps, I'm sorry.
Just two quick questions on this.
Sure.
Because I think, if we devolve into the details too much, people will get lost, and
okay,
plus they can go to rawstory.com. I'm far more concerned with the big picture here. Number one, is this still going on for this election in 2008?
Yes, this structure is still in place.
So even though there's a Democrat as Secretary of State in Ohio, and even though we think everything's going to be fine, the output, the numbers that are tabulated from all the different precincts and counties are going to go to a Republican-controlled website in Tennessee, which will then tell the state what the totals are.
Correct. Right.
and will tell all the rest of us.
You pretty much summarized it. That's
correct. So Ohio could still be could easily be stolen in this election, number one.
Right.
And number two, this company is still saying, are they still asserting that the 5 million emails that, of the Bush administration, internal emails, Karl Rove emails, et cetera, that these emails are missing, gone forever?
Correct, yes. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But I should note also that, playing devil's advocate here, we talked to another expert, a Stanford professor, who said basically that in order to achieve something of this magnitude, you would require that people on the county level, you know, you're sending in your results,
right,
and they're being posted. So on the county level, if what you sent doesn't match what's ultimately posted, then alarms would have been raised. It would require a lot of people for this type of conspiracy. And that's his argument in terms of,
Well, when we had Chris Hood on a couple of days ago, who, you know, is a deep old whistleblower. And
right,
he said, really, all you have to do to flip a state is find the one or two counties or the four or five precincts that are the most Democratic or the most Republican, for that matter, if you're trying to flip it, you know, the other way.
Right.
And just flip a few of them.
Right. Know? Well, actually, and you know, one of the points, I don't make this in the article, but I've been talking about this, is in 2004, I reported on this sort of election team in Claremont County, Ohio, that was literally committing crime. They were destroying ballots and adjusting ballots and putting stickers on ballots so that when they were read, they were not read for carry. And if you put a couple of people, maybe, you know, in a couple of counties, so maybe three people is all you need, that's not really such a big conspiracy.
Right.
It's just a couple of people and the guys over in the, you know, allegedly over in Tennessee doing something.
Now, finally, there's another guy involved in this thing, and he's going to have to testify today?
He's being deposed today. Actually, I believe it's done, and we should be hearing soon what transpires.
Okay, as soon as you get the information on that, you'll let me know?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, and we'll promote it, and we'll send people over to rawstory.com to read all about it. Larissa Alexandrovna, one of the best investigative reporters in the country, rawstory.com, the website. Larissa, thanks so much for dropping by.
Thank you.
Great talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour. Thea Lee from the AFL-CIO will be with us next. Stick around. Tom Hartman with you on Air America Radio.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Cooler Wars, Tom Hartman here with you, 21 minutes past the hour. Thea Lee on the line with us. She is the policy director for the AFL-CIO, the website AFLCIO.org. Thea, welcome.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you back with us. The AFL-CIO, your many members all across the United States out in droves for Obama and for progressive candidates all across the nation, for pro-labor candidates all across the nation. Tell us, A, what's going on, and B, what we can do to help.
Well, we have an amazing effort this year, even better than usual, with about 250,000 union volunteers out knocking on doors, calling folks at phone banks, flyering at work sites, and so on. And it's been just amazing. The labor movement's really come together around this election because they see that, I think, the survival of the labor movement is at stake here. And we hope folks will join us at, we have, 400 staging, GOTV staging areas in about 23 battleground states. We're involved in more than 500 races, if you take from the top of the ticket all the way down to state legislatures and governor races and some ballot initiatives and so on. So, but folks can call up their local labor office to see where to get plugged in, or go to our website. If you go to our website, aflcio.org, you can also figure out how to plug in to some of these efforts.
Right, and we should say GOTV has nothing to do with the GOP. It's Get Out the Vote, GOT.
That's right.
Right, and so this is a Get Out the Vote. I always cringe a little bit when I hear that GOTV because it just so sounds like GOP. It's like, oh, no.
I guess I never even think about those initials.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah, don't even. I don't want to hear about the GOP ever again. I mean, I'm just. It's just like they have done so much damage to this country. I mean, all the way back to, you know, the first time that they grabbed power after the Roosevelt, or during the Roosevelt administration. Well, actually, it was during the Truman administration. It was, what, 47, Taft-Hartley. Ever since then, it's been just, you know, the Republicans have just been full tilt boogie, trying to take down organized labor, trying to take down the working families of America, trying to take down the middle class and replace us with a nation of, you know, poor workers. And it's just a tragedy. And I see a wave. I see just people pushing back and saying, no, we are going to take back this country, and we are going to have a country where you can live in the middle class. Your work is respected. The work of your hands is respected, and you can raise a family, put your kids through school, have your health care, and have a decent retirement. The definition by Teddy Roosevelt, the Republican president, of the square deal, of what he referred to as a living wage, that can once again be the American dream, as it was from the 1930s to the 1980s, when Reagan started deconstructing it.
You are so right, and it's not just the American dream, but it is American values. What do we stand for as a nation if it's not a decent life, dignity at the workplace, and the ability to raise your children without hunger, without scrambling around for the next paycheck and so on? So we're a wealthy country, but we need to make sure that workers share in the wealth of this great country.
And that sounds like socialism, Thea. But the fact of the matter is, you know, I think that John McCain is just shooting himself in the foot here. Every time he goes out and he says, oh, Barack Obama wants to spread the wealth, and what Obama's talking about, I think most people know it, is cutting the taxes for people who make less than $200,000 a year and stabilizing, keeping, you know, not raising taxes for people who make less than $250,000 a year, and frankly raising the taxes on people who make more than $250,000 a year. And McCain, who's worth $100 million, when he says that, or Sarah Palin, who last year made over $250,000, when they get all hysterical about, oh my God, they want to spread our wealth, I think most Americans are like, that's fine with me. You know?
Well, I think the amazing thing is that the American people are finally focused in on the real issues at stake. And with the economy in such terrible shape, we really can't afford to mess around anymore, and we can't afford 8 more years, that's for darn sure, of the policies that have put us into this economic crisis.
Right. And Democrats and a strong labor movement took us out of the last Republican Great Depression. They can take us out of this Republican economic crisis, whether it becomes the second Republican Great Depression or whether it simply stands as, you know, the Bush recession, whatever it's going to take. You know, it's Hillary Clinton used to like to say, you know, it's going to take a Clinton to clean up after a Bush again. It's going to take Democrats anyway to clean up after the Republicans again.
And it looks like we're going to have that mandate both in the presidential race and in the Senate and the House of Representatives.
You really think we'll hit 60 votes in the Senate?
I don't know. We're within shouting distance of 60 votes in the Senate. We ought to get at least 6, and we could get the 9. But we're going to have to work pretty hard to get that 9.
I am so pushing. We're on the air in New Hampshire. You know, get out there in New Hampshire and let's take down John Sununu here in Oregon. We need to say goodbye to Gordon Smith. In Minnesota, Norm Coleman, I mean, it's just the kind of campaign he has run is despicable. Get Al Franken in there. Jim Martin against Saxby Chambliss in Georgia. Bruce Lunsford in Kentucky taking on Mitch McConnell. Kay Hagan, taking on Elizabeth Dole. I mean, these are actually good, solid candidates. Several of them are very progressive. Many of them are just kind of moderate progressive, but none of them are all of them are good, solid Democrats. And this is a good, solid Democratic year, and our listeners in these states need to show up. They need to help out. They need to walk door to door. They need to go to AFLCIO.org and see, you know, how they can plug into the efforts that you guys are doing. I mean, it's really all across the country, all across the country.
There's 24 more hours.
24 more hours. And we need to have such an overwhelming mandate for Barack Obama that no right-wing crackpot can say, oh, well, you know, country doesn't really want him to do that. So, Thea Lee, AFLCIO.org, the website. Thanks, Thea.
Thanks for having me, Tom. Bye-bye.
Great talking with you. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
34 minutes past the hour on the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. And our old friend Congressman Dennis Kucinich on the line with us. Congressman Kucinich, welcome.
Hi, Tom.
Great to have you with us again.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
I was reading an article yesterday about how the how AIG's, I believe it was AIG, it was one of the banks, that one of the groups that is getting billions in bailout money, that their German division is getting ready to pass out $6 billion in bonuses.
Well, this bonus thing is totally out of control. When you consider that anyone who received a bailout was supposedly asserting that they are starved for capital, and that, therefore, unless the government helped it protect them, they're going to go down. And then they're taking capital and using it for bailouts. That is, to me, indicative of what's been wrong in Wall Street and what's wrong with our government right now in its response to the problems of Wall Street. All the government's doing is accelerating the wealth upwards, picking winners and losers, and helping those who ran the economy into the ground with their speculations profit further from it.
Congressman Kucinich, you're chairman of the Subcommittee on Domestic Policy. Are you using the committee to look into this? I mean, where is this going?
My subcommittee, I wrote a letter to Henry Waxman, who's chairman of the full committee, and they have a staff that's about 15 times the size of mine. So I asked him if he would take this up so that we could get the information from these companies before the bonuses are distributed. So, and it's not just bonuses, it's other executive pay and compensation packages, so that we can get the information, call to public attention and the attention of the Congress, and try to find a way to stop it. So Mr. Waxman set a deadline, I believe, of November 11th for the banks and other firms to be able to provide the information to our investigative committee. And from there, it's going to be a matter of trying to pressure Treasury, as well as the Congress, to take other action in the lame duck session to stop these bonuses from occurring, and in addition to that, to make the public aware of it. Because, you know, they never address the central problem, Tom, which is that you got millions of people losing their homes who are not able to pay their mortgages, so the banks aren't getting the money, the money's not percolating up in the economy. They have never addressed this single issue, which is at the epicenter of our financial crisis. Instead, they give this bailout to Wall Street. We're borrowing money from the banks to give money to the banks, borrowing an interest, I might add, to give to the banks so that they can either offload their toxic debt, hoard the money, or use it to take over other banks. I mean, this is madness.
It's really Reaganomics, isn't it, Congressman? I mean,
it's Reaganomics gone toxic. I wouldn't even dignify it by calling it Reaganomics. I would say that it is a form of class warfare that is unprecedented in the history of this country, because it's taking all the money from the taxpayers and giving it to a few people, and it's giving it to people who already have gained a great amount of plunder, and helping them further capitalize it.
I would guess if there is an analogy, it would probably be in the 1880s, the 140, I think it was, million acres of public land that were given to the railroads, entirely for-profit corporations, and nothing demanded in return for it. I mean, and which produced five major railroad barons who then influenced public policies for decades. It's just truly mind-boggling.
You know, when you look at the history of American politics, you know, you can look at the 1880s, you can look at Teapot Dome, you can look at Enron, and I'll tell you, all of this is going to pale in comparison to what's been done on Wall Street and the compounding problem that was created by the $700 billion bailout. I mean, this is a massive transfer of wealth upwards, and it has to be checked in order to protect our economy from great destruction. We need to keep people in their homes. Government has to take a controlling interest in these. Treasury should be taking a controlling interest in the mortgage-backed securities to enable people to do loan modifications, lower their interest rate, lower their principal, extend the terms of payment, keep people in their homes. We need a new WPA to prime the pump of the economy, get millions of people back to work. I mean, there's no reason why America needs to go down. But if we don't address this, we will have begun to see the eclipse, a political eclipse of America.
We're talking with Congressman Dennis Kucinich, his website, kucinich.house.gov. And this isn't the problem, or a large part of the problem here, Congressman, that the legislation was so sloppily written I mean, the original three-page memo was dreadful, but the ultimate legislation was so sloppily written that basically control of how this is administered was given to the executive branch, and the executive branch is run by kleptocrats.
Well, one person's slop is another person's feast.
Right.
So it in retrospect, it may have been sloppily written, but I would say it was written with intent. It was written so that there wouldn't be any real direction to the Treasury Department. The Treasury could pick winners and losers. I mean, what's that about? The government shouldn't be involved picking winners and losers. In a market, it's counterintuitive to what a market's about. A market's about risk. Government essentially underwrites the risk. That's not what finance capitalism is supposed to be about. But what's happened is, we have seen, because the cops walked off the beat at the Fed and the Securities and Exchange Commission, we've seen us move away from industrial capitalism to finance capitalism, and they're just making money, you know, out of thin air. Banks are creating money out of thin air, and, you know, the government's standing by and not just helping to bail out the banks. They're giving the banks the key to the Treasury. We're turning our country over to the banks.
Yeah. What can and should we do?
Pardon?
What can and should the average
Well, what we should
do
is there should be loan modification directed out of Treasury to keep people in their homes.
Right.
There should be a program to put millions of Americans back to work, rebuilding our roads, our bridges, our water system, our sewer system, prime the pump of the economy. There should be a Works Green administration, a new Green New Deal that mm-hmm. would have America building, designing, engineering, manufacturing, installing and maintaining tens of millions of wind and solar microtechnologies that would lower the cost of energy and lower our carbon footprint. We should be looking at putting the Fed under the control of the Treasury so we mm-hmm. stop the continued concomitant effects of the privatization of our money supply that began in 1913.
Yep. I absolutely agree with you on all of these points. Let's talk about the election for a moment, if you don't mind. Thoughts on what's going on?
Well, I'm in Ohio, and I think Ohio's going to be close. It's really going to depend on turnout factors. I mean, the Obama campaign has an enormous turnout operation going, which I think is going to hold him in good stead. But at the same time, we've learned from past experience that no matter what we do in the northern part of the state, if the tide in the other part of the state runs even stronger, you know, we're off to the races in terms of the final outcome in Ohio. Nationally, it would appear that Obama's got an edge. But, you know, this is the kind of election that you really don't know until the votes are all in. I think we should presume, for the sake, with caution being a instructive for the purpose of getting out our vote, we should presume that it's going to be a close race in Ohio. And nationally, people just should get the vote out, period.
Yeah.
Get the vote out. That's what it all depends on. It all depends on getting a turnout.
Yeah, absolutely. In 2004, this story was just broken by Larissa Alexandrovna, investigative reporter for Raw Story. And in 2004, the Ohio Secretary of State's office had all the precincts, all the counties transmit their vote totals to a website in Tennessee, which is owned by a partisan Republican company that is also the host for GWB 43 and all these websites that were used by Karl Rove, where all the 5 million emails are now missing. It's the same corporation. And that corporation then processed the vote totals and then fed them back to the public website for the Secretary of State's office to show the outcome of Ohio. And oddly enough, as the evening went on later and later, suddenly Republican numbers started going up and up, and eventually Kerry lost the state, although first half of the day it looked like he was way ahead. It turns out that company today or tomorrow will again be processing the votes. That company in Tennessee will be processing the electronic votes done in Ohio and feeding that information back to Ohio. This is something that was pointed out by a fellow by the name of Stephen Spoonamore, who was working on the McCain campaign and finally said enough already. And there are a number of whistleblowers who have now come forward on this. Is this the sort of thing that I know, you know, you've got a great Secretary of State, a Democratic Secretary of State in Ohio. At what point do we say enough already with privatization of our votes?
Amen. There shouldn't be any privatization of counting votes, of processing election returns, of using any kind of data in an election, because you can always have an adulteration of the results. And so, you know, haven't we learned anything? Why are we still doing this? Yeah. You know, the whole election process has to be a transparent public process with accountability by public officials. If that doesn't exist, we can't have any confidence in the results of an election.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, you know, in the 50s, when I was a little kid, my mom volunteered to be a poll worker at Kendon High School or elementary school in Lansing, and they would sit there after the election and count the ballots, you know, and you know, with the people from the parties standing over their shoulders making sure that they were being counted right, and the volunteers would count them and they'd write them on a piece of paper, then they'd call up and say, here's the result. I mean, we can do this. We did it for 100 years, 200 years in this country. It's amazing. Anyhow, Congressman Dennis Kucinich, kucinich.house.gov is the website. Congressman, thanks so much for dropping by today.
Thanks again. It's also kucinich.us. Thanks.
Kucinich.us. You're absolutely right. Thank you for reminding me. Kucinich.us. Great talking with you. 45 minutes past the hour.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at hartmanradio.com.
Seat by seat, step by step, I'm telling you, get out there, go door to door, call people, send, you know, there was a great suggestion somebody made the other day, was just go through your cell phone list. If you've got a bunch of, you know, people, phone number, you know, just go through, hey, I'll call him, I'll call her, you know, call the people in your neighborhood, just go to door and say, hey, be sure to vote, have you voted? And by the way, consider voting for, you know, so-and-so, and, you know, fill in the blank, as it were. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. JB in California. Hey, JB, what's up? JB, you're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. I had you on mute. Yeah, earlier you talked about Republicans, and I am a lifelong Republican, as is my wife. And this year we'll be voting for Obama. As a matter of fact, we'll probably be voting for a lot of Democrats, even though we're Republicans.
Now, why were you Republicans, and why are you voting for Democrats?
Well, we were Republicans because we believed in, you know, it's what's the old thing, give a guy a fish, and if you feed him for a day, you teach him to fish, and you feed him for life.
Right.
We always felt that the Republicans didn't give people immediate relief, but they did what allowed us all to provide for ourselves forever.
Can you give any examples? And not to be...
Well,
contentious here, but.
You know, I was more of a, I guess, an Eisenhower-type Republican.
Right, okay.
That was pro-business, but not, at the same time, not anti-labor.
Right.
I think what did it for us was the radical swing to the religious right.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, these last 8 years have been an absolute disaster, in my view.
Yeah.
So, plus some things that have happened to us personally with regards to the loss of our pension and a few other things with regards to the company we worked for, while the people that ran the company were making obscene bonuses, the employees that worked there were either losing their jobs or taking up to 50% pay and benefit cuts, and those that were retired lost the majority, if not all, of their pensions.
Yeah.
And this seems to be the new Republican way.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, Reagan ushered it in. Greed is good, you know, this whole new, he recalibrated the American dream. Prior to Reagan, the American dream was having a good job where, you know, with a high school diploma, if that's what you had, which is what the majority of Americans had in the 30s and 40s and 50s, where you could raise a family, you know, with good, honest labor. You put in a good, honest 40-hour week, and you could raise your family, put your kids through school, make sure that you had health care, you were taken care of, you had a pension in your old age, you didn't have to worry about it. You know, pretty straightforward stuff. Reagan came in and recalibrated the American dream to becoming Donald Trump.
Well, in addition to the things I told you, we have been listening to your program, and you have piqued my interest in the difference between supply-side economics and demand-side economics. Mm-hmm. And now I think I understand what trickle-down means, and now I think I have a better understanding of demand-side.
Yeah.
It's clear to me that we need to return to demand-side economics. And historically, the Republicans didn't have any problem with demand-side economics, then we switched to supply-side.
Yeah, yeah. If
it take the Democrats to get us back into demand-side economics.
Yeah, it will, and it always has, because trickle-down economics does nothing more than produce a nation of peons. I know it's a terrible pun, but it's also true. JB, I got to move along. Thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for sharing your story with us. Jeff Merkley is on the line with us. He's running for the United States Senate here in Oregon against Gordon Smith. Gordon Smith, the Republican who votes with Bush the vast majority of the time, and then all of a sudden the last year before the election, this is the second time he's tried this little trick, he starts dragging out a few Democrats that he's had photo ops with. Jeff Merkley, a great man. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much. It's tremendous to be with you.
And Jeff Merkley, Merkley.com is the website. He's the Speaker of the House of Oregon, by the way, and running in the U.S. Senate. This is one of those seats. This is one of those in particular where this could provide us with a governing majority. Jeff, the Republicans are all hysterical about 60 votes in the Senate. My point is that 60 votes in the Senate, without 60 votes in the Senate, FDR would not have passed the New Deal. Without 63 votes in the Senate, LBJ would not have gotten any of the great stuff he got done, including civil rights legislation. That we need 60 votes in the Senate. You need to be one of them. And every single person in the state of Oregon needs to be out walking the door. I mean, I did my walking for Jeff Merkley yesterday, although I did it electronically. I sent out emails to people, but in my neighborhood. But it's people need to be getting out there. How's it going?
Well, it's going real well. I've been traveling from one place to another for rallies and for kicking off canvases. There's a tremendous amount of energy. I think people really understand that right now this vote in Oregon is going to help put our nation back on track. And I couldn't agree with you more. We've had enough of paralysis. We've had paralysis the last 2 years of can't get anything to the floor for a vote. We certainly don't want to continue that paralysis with President Barack Obama. We need to be able to move an agenda and change this nation in every conceivable way.
We're talking with Jeff Merkley, candidate for the United States Senate here in Oregon. And there are similar Democrats running all across the country. For our listeners who are in Kentucky, Bruce Lunsford. For our listeners in North Carolina, Kay Hagan. Our listeners in Georgia, Jim Martin. Our listeners in Minnesota, certainly Al Franken. These are really important races. Jeff, in these last, we have about a half a minute here. In these last few moments, what can people best do in the next 24 hours?
You know, the best thing for folks right now is to call their friends, to go and join one of our canvases. We've got a dozen offices all over the state. This is where person-to-person contact cuts through all of the junk that's coming out over the television airwaves and convinces people to weigh in and to weigh in favor of putting this nation back on track for working Americans.
Well said. Jeff Merkley, a great guy running for the U.S. Senate against Gordon Smith here in Oregon, jeffmerkley.com. Thanks, Jeff. Good luck.
Thank you so much. Take
I hope, the, hope next time we talk it is Senator Merkley. Tomorrow, Election Day 2008, plus Katrina VandeHeuvel is going to join us, editor and publisher of The Nation magazine. Don't forget, my friends, activism begins with you. Democracy begins with you. Get out there. Get out there and vote. Get out there and get your friends to vote. See you tomorrow. Tag, you're it.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.